I'm reading a book that I may not finish because it's a little bit over my head, but I like the premise of it a lot. It's called The Island of Knowledge. In this, it's kind of an extended metaphor, and in it, the author says that the island equals all accumulated knowledge of humanity, both scientific and technical, and our cultural and artistic creations. He says of this island that a vast ocean surrounds it, and he calls it the unexplored ocean of the unknown. In his image, the island grows as we gain more and more knowledge about the world and about ourselves. But then he talks about the interesting consequence. He says that you would think that the more our knowledge grows, the closer we get to some sort of destination. What others would call maybe a theory of everything, or an ultimate nature of reality, that the more we know, the closer we get to that. He says, though, however, as the island of knowledge grows, so do the shores of our ignorance, the boundary between the known and the unknown. The more we know, the more we know to ask. He calls this border the boundary of ignorance, but another author, and this may be where he got the idea for the book, another author says, the larger the island of knowledge, the longer the shoreline of wonder. Our story in the Old Testament today is the conclusion of Job's story. He keeps thinking that if he can make his island of knowledge big enough, he will be able to understand God and what has happened to him in his relationship with God. He wanted answers about God and God's ways. He wanted to have his own theory of everything. But the more certain he became of his knowledge of God, the less he understood. Job had endured terrible losses, which brought him to examine his life and his understanding of God. He had this flood of questions from God at this conclusion. There was great irony in this encounter. He had difficulty answering these questions. And yet there was a satisfaction he had at God's presence. All of these things, though, caused Job to lose his self-assurance, which caused him to seek out a meeting with God. I don't know about you, but if I'm honest, this passage is kind of embarrassing and intimidating rather than being reassuring. It makes me feel like we used to feel when I was in parochial school, we did something wrong and the nuns rapped us on the knuckles with a ruler. It just makes me feel chastised. Like, look, do you know the answer to any of this? But we are weak, frightened beings, all too well aware of our mortality and our smallness. So why does God seem to be picking on us, or at the very least indifferent to our suffering in this passage? I think it's a fair question to ask if God is all-powerful and all-loving. What would God expect us to do when he gave us free will and intellect and then allowed us to suffer? Carl Jung has written an entire book about this part of Job, and it's called Answer to Job. And in that book, he talks about Job's having to pray to God for help against God. If we think God can help us in any circumstance, we must also, in the back of our minds, consider that God caused that circumstance, or at least allowed it to happen. We all wonder about God's justice. We all try to explain the conclusion to Job's story. One of the commentaries says about this passage, far from the judge who levies charges or defends a victim, God responds as a poet. God does not correct Job or teach him a lesson, but dazzles him with the divine glory. Really? That's not what I got. To me, God responds almost as a bully, albeit an eloquent bully. Back 15 or so years ago, 15 or 20 years ago now, I was first exploring about God, and one of my friends who was a very faithful person and knew a lot about religious things, we were talking, and I asked her this question about why God allows tragedies to happen. If God is all-powerful and all-loving, why would God allow us to be hurt, especially in times when we don't seem to have done anything wrong? And her answer was a passage from Isaiah that says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." This passage from Isaiah is often used as a catch-all to explain away theodicy, which is the conundrum of God's justice. Why would God let these things happen? A lot of people answer with this passage from Isaiah, "But it doesn't work for me." To say God's ways and thoughts are higher, to me, should mean that God is more merciful and more loving, not more capricious and fickle. And yet, in this story of Job, this divine throwing around of weight ultimately becomes an assurance that God is bigger than we are, and only a God bigger than we are can save us. Gustavo Gutierrez says that we need the idea for God, not of retribution, but the idea that our behavior does matter. He says to be a believer requires a certain ethical behavior. But the people of God behave lovingly not to cause God's favor, but in thanksgiving for God's grace. Gutierrez goes on to say, "In the beginning was the gratuitousness of divine love. Not retribution, is the hinge on which the world turns." In other words, God didn't need us, but God created us out of love anyway. In our Eucharistic prayer, we say, "In your infinite love, you made us for yourself. And when we had fallen into sin and become subject to evil and death, you, in your mercy, sent Jesus Christ." We still want to explain God. But if we could, we would have a convenient, domesticated God, small enough to fit in the pocket, small enough to fit in the human mind, a deity incapable of doing any more than we humans can do. In this story we had today from Job, Job strikes me like a child who keeps asking, "Why?" I'm not sure he even cares about the answer, but like the child continually asking, "Why? Why?" He needs the reassurance that the parent remains close and that he is the center of the parent's attention. Fear not, Job. Fear not, people of God. God is here with us. God hears our questions. God is the God of gratuitousness, of freely given grace and love. God is here with us despite our questions and despite our fear. We should not be distressed that our knowledge of God is incomplete. We should be grateful that God is bigger than we are, or else this God could not save us. In this passage today, God receives more than instruction. He receives an assurance that God is listening and God is here. God surpasses all human knowledge. All we need to know of God is that God is God and here with us always. As we close our Eucharistic service, I always use a blessing that says, "The peace of God, which passes all understanding, keep your hearts and minds in the knowledge and love of God." We leave this place each Sunday aware of the deepest blessing, that God is here with us, and that awareness gives us a peace so deep we cannot fathom it through human means alone. We should be grateful that we can't explain God. Our human capabilities have never saved us before when the real losses of human life have come. In the best of times and the worst of times, God awaits us, always present despite our questions and our hubris and our fear. Our island of knowledge continues to grow, but with that growth, the shoreline of unknowing lengthens. So we struggle along on our little island of knowledge, trying to trust that the ocean will bring us all that we need, that its vastness doesn't threaten us, but saves and protects us. God must be bigger than our understanding, or else God could not save. The ocean is vast, but Job and other children of God do not see that vastness as threat. See it as the promise of a God mighty to save.